I'll start this one with some comments, a call out, let's say. I wish I didn't have to do this, but I feel like it's necessary. I've made a lot of videos on the topic of feminism, and I've noticed something quite interesting. When I critique certain branches of feminism, like liberal feminism, girlboss feminism, white feminism, I tend to get a lot of views from men. My last video titled The White Feminism of Western Media wasn't initially titled like this. I felt like white feminism was a bit clickbaity and not fully coherent with the topic of the video. But eventually I changed the title, and as soon as I did, the views started to go up, and the data shows that it's mostly been watched by men more than my other videos. This is not the first time I noticed this. Every time I make a critique of certain branches of feminism, I get more male viewers, I get a lot of new male subscribers, I get more interviews by men, and I'm invited by more male-run podcasts. At first I was excited, like great, I get to talk to people who aren't necessarily exposed to those feminist ideas. But over time it started to really bother me, because I felt like my criticism of certain branches of feminism was interpreted by some men, not all men, as a way to be misogynistic in an acceptable way, in an intellectual way. For example, I've received emails and DMs from men who completely misread my intentions in those critical videos or cherry-pick the information that suits their narrative. Some even used my critics to justify bad behavior, dismissing accusations of SV as white feminism or liberal feminism. So I went back to my videos in search of the things that I said that led these people to think this way, and I just couldn't find anything. In fact, I always concluded my videos by directing people to the forms of feminism which I think are beneficial for society. Anti-carceral feminism, anti-imperialist feminism, socialist feminism. Now this whole thing won't stop me from criticizing liberal feminism, girlboss feminism, but now I'm much more careful with the words that I use, how I write my scripts. Now, on the other hand, a few months ago, I released a video titled The Problem with Hollywood Baby Girls, where I argued that while sexism is systemic, a structural issue, these structures aren't separate from individuals. We're not just puppets of the systems, we still have a little bit of agency, so individual behavior matters. I was honestly a bit nervous to release that video. I was worried about how men were going to react to it, and my nervousness was actually quite valid. I got a lot of messages from men telling me that it was pointless to focus on individuals, that doing so pushes men to the right or the far right, and that basically I was just radicalizing young men. Reading those comments was deeply upsetting. First, they implied that I shouldn't call out men who act in sexist ways, and second, they treated men as if they were too fragile to handle criticism. The infantilization felt so absurd. It's not just disrespectful for me, it's disrespectful for men in general. The men I know, of all ages and political leanings, can handle criticism. These comments revealed the commenter's inability to handle that sort of criticism more than anything. Instead of leaning into the discomfort and maybe use it as an opportunity to grow, to change, they decided to turn it back on me, accusing me of radicalizing young men, which is a bold claim if you know a little bit what I do, both online and in real life. I wish these things did not affect me, but they do, so that's why I wanted to make those comments before starting the video, which is a video about men, about masculinity. So in today's video, I want to look at two trends that I've noticed recently. On the one hand, you have the male performative feminist. He may or may not have a mullet, a mustache. He may or may not have read All About Love by bell hooks or Joanne Didion. He may or may not sip matcha on the regular. And on the other hand, we have the hyper-masculine feminist, a guy who looks very masculine but is praised for his progressivism, including his defense of women's rights. My examples for this second category are Hassan Piker and Travis Kelce. And the reason why I'm choosing them is because they've recently been featured in magazines and articles and portrayed as positive masculine role models. Now, I want to be clear, I don't know any of the individuals I'm going to talk about personally. It's not about them as individuals, it's about their public image, the way they are perceived in the media, and the impact it has on culture, society, etc. In other words, I want to look at what's been happening in the media since the rise of the manosphere, the desperation to find positive male role models, and the limits of that project. I'm Alice, welcome or welcome back to my channel. So I'll make a separate video on how the manosphere has evolved into a new version of itself after the Andrew Tate fall and stuff, but in this one I want to focus on the response from the progressive side of the political spectrum. Since the rise of the manosphere, the sneakers, the Andrew Tates, the Myron Gaines, there was a general consensus that these guys weren't great, and after enough raising awareness, those people actually lost some of their popularity. That doesn't mean they didn't have an impact on society. I mean, the amount of work it took girlfriends, wives, and teachers to reverse or counter the effect these guys had on their boyfriends, their husbands, or boys in general was, and still is, insane. Huge kudos to them. These women were and still are the first victims of the manosphere. So yeah, there was consensus that these guys weren't ideal, but there was also a lot of panic that all men would turn into full-on misogynists. In response to that, the media tried to find and present alternative role models to young men, healthy masculinity models. One of them was Justin Baldoni, and we all know how this ended. Other so-called healthy masculinity role models were people like Timothée Chalamet or Harry Styles. For a while, they were heralded as examples to follow. Articles and books were written on how hegemonic masculinity, which basically means the type of masculinity that dominates culturally, might be evolving towards a softer, more feminine form. To be fully honest, those discussions around Timothée Chalamet or Harry Styles as masculine role models started before the manosphere became a big deal. As the manosphere grew and the crisis of masculinity became a bigger topic, hopes that a soft, feminine masculinity would take over started to dwindle. No, the solution to the so-called crisis of masculinity wasn't going to be Harry Styles or Timothée Chalamet. These guys were quite popular among women, but clearly men didn't really care about them. In fact, the rise of the manosphere showed that the, you know, patriarchal type of masculinity was still very relevant, very popular among young men, therefore contradicting the media's hopes for a softer, more feminine model. As you can see here, there's often a gap between what cultural magazines and articles say and the reality of what men actually aspire to be. This gap comes down to perspective. The people writing those articles tend to live in big cities, in metropolitan areas where gender fluidity is more common. But generally speaking, the idea of what a respectable man should be has definitely shifted. You can look at ads to kind of figure that out. Compare ads from the 1960s, the 1990s, and now.
Bullying.
The Me Too movement against sexual harassment.
Toxic masculinity.
In today's ads, men can be found doing the laundry, they let their wives drive the car, they cook, they fight against toxic masculinity. The respectable man today is a feminist, broadly speaking, and he gets socially rewarded for this. So being a male feminist is cool now. There's an incentive to go in that direction. This is good in a way because it encourages men, fathers, husbands, boyfriends to become better people. But we know that when something becomes trendy or socially rewarded, that's when performativity creeps in. Many people want to be perceived as cool without having to put the work in it, so they perform what they're not. This also applies to guys who don't necessarily want to be cool, but do want to get that female attention for whatever they want to do with it. If women want soft boy feminists, the Timothée Chalamet type, then men are going to deliver. My female friends on dating apps all report seeing guys using prompts, pictures, or tastes that signal male feminists. And I'm not saying that every man displaying those traits is performing, but you know, the skepticism is valid. It's pretty much the same thing as seeing a text with a lot of M dashes. It could be authentic, or it could be ChatGPT. Dating apps obviously don't help with this at all. You know, they let users portray themselves in whatever way they want, and over time, this marketplace logic of tick the boxes, spot the red flags, encouraging the formation of stereotypes, caricatures. High-skilled performative male feminists tick all the boxes before you can notice the red flags. Capitalism does not breed innovation, and dating apps are no exception to this. Over time, profiles become increasingly stereotypical to the point where they auto-mimify. You must have seen the videos of the performative male feminist contests in Seattle and other cities. The typical performer has a tote bag, bell hooks or Joanne Didion in one hand, a little notebook in the other. It's a whole aesthetic. I guess at this point, the performative male feminist has been properly called out. No one is taking them seriously anymore. Everyone has been warned. But yeah, this is not too surprising. The male feminist was mostly an aesthetic popularized by culture magazines. It had no depth, no real feminism, just vibes. But for a while, it fulfilled culture's need for an alternative masculine role model post-Me Too and in response to the manosphere. Now, since the US elections and the Democrats lost, more and more people are saying that the left needs its own Joe Rogan.
All right, we're rolling.
So a progressive masculine role model, a progressive mind in a MAGA body, so to speak. Who's that person they're referring to? Well, he's Twitch streamer Hassan Piker, better known online as Hassan Abi. Piker is a political commentator and Twitch streamer. He first made a name for himself at the Young Turks, and today he's one of the biggest streamers on Twitch, mixing leftist political commentary with gaming, news reaction, and chatting with his community. Lately, Piker has been on a lot of magazine covers and interviewed by mainstream liberal media. Discussions about masculinity and the manosphere often come up in these features. He's positioned as a potential solution to the so-called crisis of masculinity.
Greatest rule of thumb, of course, is that if you have to call yourself masculine or alpha, then you probably do not exhibit those qualities.
As a progressive guy who supports women's rights but also appeals to men. Now that's the big shift here, the big cultural shift. Between the Harry Styles, Timothée Chalamet time to now, the media has fully embraced the crisis of masculinity discourse. There's a very obvious way of doing this. Some articles are very obviously about this. There's also a more subtle way of doing this. What you can do to spot it is every time you see an article that is using sort of men versus women or using a gendered lens, basically, you can ask yourself, is that gendered lens necessary to talk about that societal issue? Or is it a choice that the journalist is making to, you know, take part in this very clickbaity crisis of masculinity discourse? I've talked a lot about this person called Richard Reeves, who's a liberal researcher. He's doing that a lot. You know, he's taking a lot of like societal issues that can be analyzed separately or have like various causes, but he regroups them all under this idea that men are struggling, men are in crisis. So that's an example of it. Now, I'm not saying that the issues that those journalists, researchers are talking about aren't real, but the whole crisis of masculinity discourse reinforces the idea that there's something wrong with them and that it's tied to their masculinity. Now, I've said it before and I'll say it again. For me, this is all like nonsense, BS, unnecessary. The idea that men have had to completely change their approach of how to be men, especially post-MeToo, because that's kind of how it's framed, doesn't make any sense. It's weird. You know, we've known for a very long time that SV is bad and that you should not do it. MeToo did not break the news. And also, this idea that the reason why men are suffering, that they are lonely, depressed, and stuff like that is because of their masculinity and their struggle to embrace or define who they want to be as men, completely neglects the fact that there are so many things in society at the moment, so many social, economic factors that is making the lives of people, regardless of their gender, pretty bad, pretty shitty. All those problems I've mentioned can be reconnected to capitalism, our economic system. Yet mainstream media and those liberal researchers prefer a gendered lens, so an identity-based lens, because focusing on identity means that we don't have to care about like the bigger stuff. We don't have to talk about our whole economic system. We can just fix individuals here and there, fix their masculinity problems. It's for the exact same reason that mainstream media has recently turned to Hassan Piker in search of that, you know, leftist Joe Rogan, of that progressive mind in the MAGA body. But as someone who's been keeping an eye on what Hassan Piker has been doing for years now, I've seen him getting more and more popularity. And for me, that's not necessarily due to the fact that he's a leftist gym bro. It has a lot to do with the message. Most young people in the US resonate with socialism and oppose the genocide in Palestine. Hassan Piker is one of the few people with a platform to actually speak about those things. You know, people are looking for individuals and platforms that will welcome their frustrations, validate them, politicize them. It's important that the left has big media figures speaking about Palestine, because a lot of problematic streamers like Sneeko or Andrew Tate, to some degree, are seeking a rebranding through Palestine advocacy. They want to be recipients of those frustrations too. So it's not just about the way the person lurks. The values and convictions are key. Another example of this exists. Take Mehdi Hassan, for example. He's become so popular lately, and he's not a gym bro either. Or maybe he is, I don't know. His fast-growing platform reflects frustrations with media bias on Palestine and broader vibes politics. Zoran Mondani is yet another example. I mean, if you look at his profile, he's not really a Joe Rogan, but he's on track to become New York's next mayor in November. The main reason why he's so popular is because he's openly socialist. He has shown solidarity with Palestine. Because of that, he managed to mobilize 50,000 volunteers to knock on over 1 million doors. That's ultimately what people want across the gender spectrum. They want to look up to people who act, who have values and convictions. Now, Hasenbeiger is definitely not the only person being portrayed as a progressive alternative to the manosphere role models. In a different register, sports stars are getting similar treatment. A day before Hasenbeiger's latest thirst trap interview, Travis Kelce appeared in a similar half-real, half-ironic shirt. He's also developed a strong presence online with his podcast New Heights. And let's be honest, he's mostly known because he's the boyfriend of pop megastar Taylor Swift. The media loves him because he offers something less ideological than Hasenbeiger, who appears a bit more edgy. Travis Kelce is more mainstream, but still packaged as the perfect balance of strength and softness. I read this article on the evolution of Travis Kelce's style, and I thought it was quite interesting. It's definitely giving mainstream but fashion-conscious normie energy, and you can definitely see the influence of softer masculinity trends, one of those features being the moustache. Actually, what do you think about the moustache? Because for me, it's a very hipster thing, so I would say progressive. But in France, at least, more and more far-right guys, young far-right guys, are wearing the moustache. So yeah, what's your opinion on this? So this is the background, but when you look at his latest photo shoot, there is a noticeable shift. You get the thirst trap elements, that's for sure. You have poses that aren't typical of male photo shoots, but there's also some strong traditional masculinity signifiers. The army colors, the rugged man in the wild vibes, a hairy muscular chest, a cowboy hat, and that iconic yellow vest. Not me pretending it's pure coincidence that there's a yellow vest in the background. I wish my French yellow vest protesters looked like that. Even the location matters here. Florida, known for being a conservative state. All these elements, the ruggedness, the traditional masculinity codes, reflect the media's search for a model of masculinity that appeals to the guys who listen to Joe Rogan, the real men they've supposedly lost to the right or the far right. Travis Kelce is special in that sense, because he's also the beloved boyfriend of pop feminism icon Taylor Swift. It's the perfect blend of tough and sweet that draws in female audience too. Now that reminds me of some research I was doing for a video on audio erotica that is going to be available on Patreon soon. In that video I found that on a lot of those audio erotica platforms, the themes of rural men, sportsmen, the Irish bar owner type of thing were very, very popular. In those stories, the female character was often a young, educated woman who was looking for an escape outside busy life in big city centers. Travis Kelce embodies that fantasy in some ways, and he's very aware of this. Back in 2016, Kelce even had a reality TV show where 50 women competed for his love. At the time, he wanted a woman to, quote, fit into all aspects of his life. Now he's joking about flipping the script and being Taylor Swift's Pretty Man, bringing the reversal of the script of the movie Pretty Women with Julia Roberts. On the cover of GQ, he's definitely borrowing elements from the performative male feminist playbook while still leaning into traditional masculinity, as we can see on this cover. People evolve, of course, but in big media, evolution tends to align with what is culturally relevant. So when we zoom out, what we see is kind of ironic. The manosphere with its toxic role models set off a panic about men, and the media rush to fill the gap with healthy masculinity alternatives. Gym bro leftists, soft boys, football boyfriends, whatever template could work. But the harder they try to package masculinity in a palatable, progressive way, the more absurd it becomes. It keeps feeding into the same crisis of masculine narrative that was never really about masculinity to begin with. And the danger is that this framing is making more and more people tune out of feminism altogether, seeing it reduced to vibes, to aesthetics, to role model shopping, instead of what it really is, a political movement to transform the structures that create inequality in the first place. That's the shame of it, because feminism isn't about crafting the perfect man. It's about building a society where everyone can live, work, and love free of domination. If you like this video and the themes I cover on this channel, then I think I have a new series for you. It's called Amy's Dream House. It's a whimsical, introspective show that takes on some really relevant themes like beauty standards, hustle culture, and the role friendships play in our lives. What I love is how these big, sometimes heavy topics are explored through this fantastical dream house world. Amy chats with her talking appliance friends, navigates a playful, colorful environment, and the whole thing feels both calming and thought-provoking at the same time. It's reflective in a way that's very aligned with the kind of conversations we have on this channel. Now you can watch Amy's Dream House on Nebula, which is the premium streaming platform made by creators for creators that I'm now a part of. On Nebula, you'll find familiar names like Philosophy Tube, FD Signifier, Not Just Bikes, and many more of your favorites. It's packed with original ad-free content that you won't find anywhere else, and it gives creators the freedom to explore ideas without having to worry about clicks, algorithms, or demonetization. I'm really happy to be part of this community of creators, and you can already find all of my videos, old and new, ad-free on Nebula. The subscription is super affordable, and with my link, you can get 40% off an annual subscription. So that means you only pay $36 a year or $3 a month. You can sign up at go.nebula.tv/AliceCappell. Again, that's go.nebula.tv/AliceCappell, or you can scan the QR code that is on screen right now. Thank you, Nebula, for sponsoring this video and supporting the work we do. Before I leave, I want to say thank you to my Patreons and a big thank you to top-tier Patreons. Nuffle, Shamari, Fred, Hongqing Wong, Paul-Louis Agenou, Wolf Kratz, Patrick Button, Jeff Lee, Taya Matin, Nick, Brandon, James Siddle, Ojwal, Pablo, Patrick Riley, Boris, Ria, Donage, Alex, Ian, Corey G, Tristan, Christopher, Manuel, Christopher France, and Perry. And thank you to the other ones who prefer to stay anonymous. That's it for me. That's it for today. Again, thank you so much for watching the video, and I'll see you very soon. Salut!